Everybody, thank you for listening to Three Empty Pints this week. If you still haven't subscribed to us, please do. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Pocket Casts, and Acast. You can also email us your witticisms and feedback and suggestions, 3EmptyPints@mail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 3EmptyPints. Also, if you would like to donate to us, support us, send us money, you love our cynicism and you want to keep us going, please click on the tip jar link in this episode's description, or you can visit our website as well. This week we have a fantastic episode for you. As always, we explore how politics has gone to hell in this country. The red and the blue suck. They're imploding. And we have these new political philosophies called, I don't know, the alt-right? Is that true? I don't know. We try to figure it out. Take it away.
Take it away, Chad.
God, this might be a six-part episode. I didn't know this is where we were going to start. I thought we were going to lead into this. Oh,
well,
fuck
we
me.
Can. Here's the idea. We talked about this in private this week. How did these quote-unquote fringe groups or alt political movements start? They started because there is a real political divide in this country. We can talk about the elite capitals of Boston, New York. Los Angeles, these places where the media is centered, where the political, the philosophical mindset of these politics are centered. And how did... What happened? Well, it's real easy because the Democrats are fucked and the Republicans are fucked. These parties are so... They're imploding before our eyes. This past election was like a 9/11 moment in a way, right? Because it really brought people to go, what the fuck is wrong politically in this country?
Yeah, can you imagine if you're, like, one of those political reporters who, like, came up in the 80s when you had – I mean, I don't want to say they were perfect or they were wonderful, but you had Democrats and you had Republicans and they were pretty unified internally.
So they were
a lot closer to the center, but
so
they had
there
their
was a
stance.
Certain stability to it.
Though. Yeah.
It's like, okay, the Dems are on this side and the Republicans on their side, but we know what they're all about, and it's just a matter of what side of the fence.
And they weren't quite as fringe as they've become either. I mean, they were a lot closer to the middle, and they had the – there was some give and take, and there were issues that pulled both sides together, and there were issues where you'd get people crossing the party lines, you know, because they wanted to or because it worked out better for where they were from. And now you've got – I mean, look at the Republicans. You've got the Freedom Caucus fighting the business Republicans, fighting the moral – is that what they're called? I don't even know what they're called anymore.
But I mean,
the religious guys.
I mean, okay, look – yeah, okay, let's start with that. What was – I mean, when I can remember, what were Republicans back in the day?
Christians.
The Christian Coalition.
But do you remember when they stole that from the Democrats, if we go back even farther? When, you know, the racist Democratic South.
Who founded the KKK?
And tried to secede. I mean, if we go back even farther, you know, and the Republicans were the party that fought against slavery. Mm-hmm. And then Nixon stole the Christian vote, if you will, and made Christianity and Republicanism the same thing.
That might be true, and I won't argue with that.
Did I say Reagan?
No, you said Nixon.
I meant Reagan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Reagan. Under Reagan is when the whole let's round up Christians and brainwash them. So that's an interesting path you're taking, because what happened first? The Democrats said, let's get the quote-unquote minority vote.
Did that happen first, or was that the... I feel like that was the reaction to recover the lost votes. That was the
backup plan. It's like, oh, we lost the Christians?
We lost the South.
The minorities. Well, yeah, they're shit on a lot.
From this is where I'm going. Okay, let's start this over then. Back in the 90s, the Republicans went after and started your whole Christian coalition thing. It would be like your Pat Buchanan, your Newt Gingrich. What they did is they went to the South and they rounded up all the holy rollers and they said the Democrats don't value God. They don't value your beliefs. They are a valueless, corrupt, hedonistic group of fuckers. Vote for us. And then this is where your whole Joel Osteen generation of super ministers and like your even before that, you know, Jim Baker and all this shit. Like it was all interconnected. There was so much money running through there. And again, the Republicans were losing ground, but they took this idea from the Democrats who said, "Let's round up the black vote. Let's round up the Latino vote. Let's round up the Hispanic vote. Let's get the entire quote-unquote minority vote and run with it." Mm-hmm. So it didn't become about values or culture or upholding some sort of Jeffersonian or Washingtonian
Jeffersonian
beliefs
that every party quotes, and we're so far away from a world he could have even pictured, it doesn't fucking matter anymore.
Exactly, but it's all a facade. So yeah. It became about, let's just round up followers. I mean, they preceded the
reliable votes.
Followers, yeah. Where have I heard that?
Yeah, that's what it became about, a score. How many more people can we get?
And then how can we gerrymander the districts so we can make sure we have our 60-40 majority? Boy, did I say that out loud?
That was deep, Chad.
It's all a sham. It's all a sham. And that's why I said I think this election was really that big moment where people kind of were like, what's going on here? And the DNC got lambasted. They were hung out to dry. I mean, there's a lot of Democrats and a lot of millennials who refuse to believe WikiLeaks, that they were driven by propaganda that emanated from the mainstream media that said Assange was on the side of Russia. That's why this whole Russian thing was going, because they wanted to associate Assange and Russia. They had to cover this up. It was so goddamn damning. The so-called Podesta files threw Hillary and the DNC under the bus.
They threw Bernie under the bus.
It laid out how corrupt it is, where the money was flowing, what the Clinton Foundation was doing. Donna Brazile getting the questions to CNN. I mean, these were devastating, but the media wants to say, no, that's not how it is. That didn't sway Trump, because Trump voters are racist. Neo-Nazis.
But on the same side, there was the Republican oversight, you know, who had all these candidates lined up, and I think they kind of wanted to see who filtered through before they threw their support behind them. And Trump came out of left field, and he's like, hey, bitches.
I think, see, here's the thing. The Republicans have no philosophical or cultural moorings anymore. They have nothing. The DNC under Obama did. They were going for their progressive platform, right?
Which at least you knew what they were going to do at the end of the day.
Right. You knew that they were going to funnel money into their pet projects and community organizations and all this shit so we could create equality in America, right? But guess what? Here comes Bernie Sanders. And I will admit, Bernie's crazy as shit, right? But I'm telling you, I sat there and went, should I vote for Bernie?
Because Bernie believes in what he's saying.
I believe in Bernie Sanders.
I do too.
I don't.
I thought Bernie was legit. I thought this guy, you know what? Granted, he's up there in New England. He's up there in Vermont, right? He's up there in Hippieville. Guess what? Bernie won. He was winning. He had a Trump moment.
He did.
He was filling arenas and stadiums. He was making the anointed queen
look like
she didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary wasn't there. It wasn't being with her. It was being with Bernie. And guess what? The DNC was pissed. The money men were pissed. Mm-hmm. The media was pissed.
Because they couldn't control him.
They couldn't control him. Bernie was going to win.
Yeah.
And guess what? I don't know what happened, but we all know, quote unquote, Bernie got paid off in some way. He's got another vacation home. Did they find dirt on Bernie? Did they find out that his wife imploded a college through her money mismanagement, which nobody really talks about, but I found out, most people, if you go online and research it, well, is that damning that a socialist wife imploded a rather well-known liberal arts college in New England? It might not look too good. But is it that bad?
No, there's got to be something else.
Not if you can say, I grabbed him by the pussy and nobody cares.
Let's be honest. What shit did the DNC have on Bernie Sanders? Did they threaten him?
Yeah, I'm thinking that's what it was.
I mean, did they threaten him? Did they send the thugs? Podesta sent his thugs and threatened his life and his family?
Maybe they said, if you win, you know, we haven't had a presidential assassination in a long time.
Alternative hypothesis, did they say, we don't care if you win, you're not getting the nod? An appeal, because he does have some party loyalty. You know, he likes to throw a spanner in the works once in a while, but what would that have done?
I think it was a straight-up threat. I think they're just like, yeah, you know what?
And they paid him off. Yeah. He got money from the DNC.
I'm sure
they gave him a fat check. But the thing about Bernie now is that he's still yapping. He's still shooting his mouth off.
Why shouldn't he?
What's he have to lose? Credibility.
But what's he gonna do?
Disappear. You know your soapbox is burned, bro.
Bro,
go away. And he hasn't. And people want to know why you have all these, why you have the rise in alt-right and things like that. Why you have all these different political philosophies. Because our two-party system failed.
It's been failing. And we've divided people so much. We've splintered them. We've moved the poles so far apart.
The DNC shot themselves in their foot by going with Obama. And going with Van Jones. And going, let's go this progressive pathway. They killed themselves. They are no longer the party for anybody. Who are they for? Did they just turn into the party for the rich?
What's the other option, though? I mean, what's the other path? Is it the Bill Clinton, you might as well be a Republican from 10 years ago, Democrat?
But they're like hypocrites. Obama didn't have any issues taking all that Goldman Sachs money and having all these Goldman Sachs officials in his administration. The revolving door between Obama and Wall Street was the highest ever.
What's the difference between them and the Republicans, though? You have these people bitching about morals.
Here's where I'm going. That old Republican-Christian coalition disappeared. Georgie Bush ran the Republican Party into the ground. Who do they have? Mitt Romney?
He's not a moral conservative.
Mitt Romney is basically a Democrat. Big Wall Street money.
Mm-hmm.
What do they
But he fronted as this big, I'm a super Republican, and he lost for it.
I'm a Mormon.
Yeah.
I'm all about religion.
I saved the Olympics in Salt Lake City.
That's right. And then I took all their money.
I wear secret underwear.
Are we surprised about what's going on politically? Are we surprised that in 2017, mainstream media is doing big interviews with Richard Spencer of the alt-right? Are we really that surprised right now?
I'm kind of surprised that it either didn't happen earlier or didn't take longer. The timing does kind of surprise me. It feels kind of sudden.
And that's what I was getting at to this week when we were talking privately. Like, I've been so disconnected from politics. I've had to jump back into it. Like, where did all this shit come from? And
it's been on the slow burner, and all of a sudden the water started boiling, and the alt-right, you know, I mean, all of a sudden Spencer's kind of a moderate as far as the alt-right goes. You know, and we joke, and you say they're not all neo-Nazis, and they're probably all not. You know, I don't want to lump them all in, but there is that element, and they're absorbing them, and they're, you know, taking them on board, and they're kind of like, you know, don't say that out loud.
The thing about, too, is that when the Republican Party had a real chance at transformation with Ron Paul, they ditched him. They fucked him over like Bernie.
Yeah.
And I said it before, the mainstream media blurred him out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they buried him.
He had enough votes for the nomination of the Republican Party. They buried him. Mm-hmm. And then they attacked him, going way back to the Ron Paul newsletter from like the 70s or 80s that he wasn't even associated with at that time. He had his name on it. And some guy was writing about how the blacks should be eradicated and all this shit. They were dredging up shit. Why? Because someone was threatening the duopoly. Same thing that happened to Bernie. He was threatening the duopoly. Was Bernie Sanders really a Democrat?
No, or I probably wouldn't like him as much as I did.
I think it's like you said, he's good at playing ball. And you know what? He's good at playing ball. And they found that, and they manipulated that part of him. And that's why they bought him out. So are we surprised, again, all this shit that's going on?
But look at Ron Paul and the Libertarians. I mean, they kind of split off, and then, you know, you had the Libertarians, and then, I'm not going to say it's a direct sequence, but you had the Tea Party. The Republicans are paying for all that now, because it's fracturing their party. What's the next step for the Democrats? Does Bernie Sanders, you know, he's talking shit, does he go, well, fuck you guys. I'm going to form the Socialist Party.
There is a real Socialist Party.
Yeah.
But they don't want it. They don't want him. No. He's too. The Socialist Party in this country is really what, like 50 people? But it actually exists. It's an international organization.
It's a bunch of stupid pseudo intellectuals sitting around a table going, oh, let's give power to the workers.
It's every liberal arts college professor in this country, is what you're saying?
Well, maybe not all of them, but.
But they're both fucked.
Yeah.
They're both fucked.
Which might be the best thing for us.
And the DNC, of course, is this malignant entity that it's going to fuck themselves over even more. The Republicans aren't sure what to do about with Trump. They have no idea.
No.
What do we do with Trump?
They tried to control him. It didn't work. They're trying to guide him. It's not working because he spent too long as his own boss. And I think I said this on air before. He never learned how to answer to anybody. You're not going to control him. The more you push him, he pushes back.
Oh, of course.
You know, and it's kind of funny to watch if you don't like either of them.
And let's think about it. People over time have figured out that both of our parties are controlled by globalists.
And money.
On the right, you have the Koch brothers. Right? They destroyed the Cato Institute back in the 70s and 80s already. They destroyed the Republican Party. They undermined the Tea Party. Right? For better or for worse, that's what they did.
Yeah.
What happened to the DNC? This progressive liberal platform by Soros, who funds MoveOn.org, who funded Obama. He destroyed this party because these quote-unquote values do not align with our country. What is our country? It is a conservative country. All the New York intellectuals can sit there and go, Hillary won the popular. She won New York and L.A.
And California.
And California that supported her ass. This is why we have electoral college in this country, because it is to protect the voting populace from these controlled centers. That's why. That's all she won. She won Boston, New York, L.A., Philly. Chicago, Philly. Well, yeah. Guess what? These are all liberal capitals. These are all the places where money flows in and out, especially New York, especially Boston, especially Chicago, liberal Los Angeles, Washington, D.C. She had the money vote. These kids can't sit there and say that this country is divided. It's that map. If you look at that map, it is blood fucking red.
The counterpoint is, I mean, more people voted for her. And I think the Electoral College has some merit.
And those counties.
Well, there are more people in those counties.
That's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, New York City has, what, 8 million people? That's more than a couple states.
How do you equate these center points, these centralized cities of this ideology? How do you say that they are equated to the rest of the country?
Yeah. Well, but
winning that state basically means that you have the majority of the vote in the United
but
States.
But what
that's what I see.
I'm not defending
Florida. Counties in Florida that voted Republican for the first time in years. I sat there and I watched Florida go down.
It was the only amazing election.
That Florida stayed with her was the money. The old money that's always voted Democrat. You know what this was? This was a vote, an election for the establishment who knows they're losing their asses, who knows that they sold out this country. The globalists, the money men, everyone who has sold this goddamn country out wants to keep his gravy train going, and they lost.
Let me make a long-winded, ass-backwards point. You sent us an article about from Zero Hedge about how a civil war is inevitable.
I don't think it is, I don't think.
I think it can be avoided. I think not everyone wants to avoid it.
If the millennials keep playing into this divide and conquer politics, the reason why we can't fall into a civil war is because this country is red.
That's kind of where I'm going. The last time there was a civil war, it was because an entire section of the country voted one way, and it didn't fucking matter. You know, there was the whole slavery thing, but it really came down to that election, and the South went, you know, we all voted for this guy and we lost. Like, we are entirely powerless. And part of that was, you know, Virginia was pretty instrumental in setting up that system, and then over 70, 80, 90 years, things changed, and they fell behind in population, and they got fucked for it. But didn't we just see the same thing happen with urban centers? They all voted one way. I mean, pretty much across the board, urban centers went blue. The rest of the country went red. That's what you just said. So we're saying the urban vote doesn't matter. In effect.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
But couldn't it be construed that way? If you're one of those people in an urban center. That's the way people in the South took it.
Chad,
150 years ago.
When they talk about elitists in this country, when we talk about the elites, they got found out. They got called
out. How did they get found out? He's the elite, the guy they voted for.
I'm not going into that because I agree with you. But the centers of this country where all this media, your entertainment, your internet media, everything that controls how we think, your financial systems, is centered in those counties, in those cities, Los Angeles, New York, Washington, D.C., Boston. These are huge, huge cosmopolitan and cultural elitist capitals. They are the ones that support the DNC. This is where the money flows.
But they all I'm saying is they have more people. I mean, they're urban centers by definition.
Chad, you know as well as I do that in this country, if you live in a city, you consider yourself better than everyone. This has been going on election after election. Red state, flyover states. Who coined that term? New York, East Coast elitists fly over states. There is not that big of a divide in this country. It is the people who generate the philosophies, who generate the ideologies, mm-hmm. who are at the center of advertising, marketing, finance, yeah, yeah. who control or think they control how people should think.
Yep. Well, they just found out they don't.
They don't. Exactly.
Why are you arguing?
No, I'm not. they found out, but what I'm saying is, you know, previously we had civil wars due to perception. How are they going to spin this? How are they going to play this? What's going to happen in 3.5 years? If the whole urban vote seemingly doesn't matter and you have all these people in New York City and all these people in Philly and all these people in Miami and Chicago and LA and they turn out and they vote and they, you know, it flips back and the people who didn't vote this last time come out and vote. It still doesn't matter because of the Electoral College. Don't you think they're going to be frustrated?
Oh, what are they going to do? Stop producing web apps, and applications for our iPhones?
I won't get a new Instagram account that I can like.
Oh, no! I won't have another photo sharing app?
Oh, damn.
Shit. I won't be able to read another website that conforms to my ideology? Don't you get it? People in this country are fed up with being force-fed ideas.
Yep.
Then why'd they vote for the king of force-fed ideas?
Because they're brainwashed, Chad. All America is, they're desperate for quote-unquote change. Why did Obama get voted in? Change. 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 Change, Chad. It's all marketing. Yeah. I said to a long-lost black friend of ours when Obama got elected, I said he's going to get 2 terms, right? And he did. And I said, after his second term, if there's no real change, this country is going up in flames. I was wrong, but at the same time, there is some combustibility in the air. Now, granted, some of this combustibility is artificial, right?
Some of it's the media fear-mongering, and some of it's the left fear-mongering and the right fear-mongering.
Right, exactly. So, in our part of this country, in our part of this state, people get up, they go to work, they make money, and they come home.
Yep.
They don't want to be force-fed.
Bullshit.
Bullshit that Obama has thrown down their throats for 8 years. People have seen no change.
Yep.
So guess what?
They're going to gravitate to what they think is going to give them change.
That's where I roll my eyes, and I rolled my eyes, and you can't see it because this is a podcast, but what about what came in gave anyone the remotest hint that there would be anything approaching change? I mean, when he said drain the swamp, he's the fucking swamp. He's Swamp Thing. But it's no
different than Obama. They fell for it with Obama for 8 years, and now they're going to go
through the same shit. But, I mean, these are the people who hated Obama, and they thought this was going to be – that's – I don't understand.
I think what he's trying to get at is that they keep spinning it. So it's like, he's going to make a difference now. He's the one that you need to vote for. He's anti-establishment.
Haven't we talked about 6 episodes into this podcast how manipulated and easily manipulated humans are?
Yeah.
But it's not complicated. Open your fucking eyes.
It's not complicated. Yeah, but here's part of it. Like I think though. What it is. I think Americans are too afraid of real change. He said this in the last podcast. Yeah. What is real sacrifice? It is going
to
take
some real fucking sacrifice to make differences in this country, and everybody's too afraid to do it. You want to know why? Because people are going to lose things, whether it's lives, whether it's property, whether it's money, whether it's friends, whether it's relationships, whatever the fuck. You are going to have to make serious sacrifices in your life to really bring about real fucking change. And I don't think anybody is strong enough or brave enough to step up and say, now is the time to really make shit fucking change and happen in this country. There's not enough of us, and there's not – I don't see it. I don't think anybody really has the balls to say that, you know what? No. Enough. It's over.
And I think people have realized that globalism's fucked this country over. Hillary can stand there all she wants and tell people otherwise, But there's too many people in this country that know what Bill Clinton did. Mm-hmm. They know they lived through the deindustrialization, through George Bush the first, through Clinton. They know things got fucked up.
And the only way it's going to reset is with critical and massive, we talked about this before, economic collapse, where everybody starts on the same plane again, and we all have to start the process all over again. Or somebody, like, civil war, or just something radical is going to have to happen to bring about real change. Huge sacrifices are going to have to be made to fix this problem. But people don't want to
make that yet.
And they don't. They haven't. Don't share the same views either. There are many of us who know this. There are many of us who see this. But there's not enough of us now who are going to be like, okay, it's time to lay it all on the line and give it all up to get where we need to be.
And this is why you have the rise of alternative politics or political parties.
And even they don't agree. I mean, we read that Ask Me Anything the other day, and they were asking him, oh, if we make this wonderful white utopia ethno-state, what form of government would you endorse? And he was like, I don't fucking know. Like, Sweden socialism worked when Sweden was white, was his answer. You know, in other in England,
why is Sweden fucked up? Globalism. Here's the one thing as we go into Chad's topic of the alt-right. Why are people gravitating towards the alt-right? It's really simple. Because
fear.
It is fear. The alt-right is the only party right now that has come out and said globalism has fucked everything up. Globalism will eradicate cultures and borders and countries for profit. Why? So it can command and control everyone. It doesn't give a shit about anything. They ran on Trump's coattails. Trump is not a national socialist by any means. That was a total media hijacking, hyperbole. That was pure media propaganda at its best.
And it missed the point, and to me, the threat and the risk. Donald Trump is money. He's always been money. He will always be money. He's going to legislate money. He's going to favor money. It's what he's done. It's what he's doing. It's what his tax plan's doing. It's everything he's going to try and do. By creating this other fear, I think you downplayed the danger.
Donald Trump is globalism. Globalist.
Yeah.
Now, is it any wonder why you see why people like Richard Spencer are getting mainstream mentioning? Is it any wonder when people, because we live in a social media world and an internet world, are on Twitter, are on Facebook, and they're seeing videos of Berkeley, they're seeing videos of social justice warriors, they're seeing videos of people in pussy hats and are questioning, what the hell's going on? This isn't my country. Why are people asking that? One, because this country, as we saw in the last election, is blood red. And two, it's a conservative country. Mm-hmm. It has always been a conservative country.
Yep.
The Democrats, the DNC, the progressives, the libtards, whatever they are, whatever they were splintered into or self-destructed into,
destroyed the very fabric of this nation.
This country is conservative.
Yep.
Well, let's go back. The Democrats were pretty conservative back in their day. They didn't want anything to change, you know, when the South was Democratic. I mean, let's be real. You know, they wanted to wake up and have the slaves work the farm and kind of run the country economically.
But isn't that what they want to do now?
I mean, what industry is there in the South?
I don't even talk about that. The Democrats want to enslave mankind and make all the money off of it. Isn't that the same thing?
I think that's both political parties want to enslave us.
I think they both became so reactive and so concerned with, you know, votes and getting a demographic and a base that they lost the original principles.
They became a business.
Yeah.
A corporatized structure.
Globalist enterprise.
Yeah. They got bought and sold too. Yeah. So is it
And we lost.
And you said reactionary, so I keep saying this, is it any wonder why you have reactionary politics?
And here's, I'm going to go into one of my big criticisms of the alt-right. I think they're intellectually lazy. If their response to globalism, as you suggest, and that idea has merit, why did they get on board with, you know, the big flashy neon sign of globalism? The guy who's building hotels in Qatar, you know, the guy saying, oh, I'm glad, you know, the pound is dying because my hotel and golf course in Scotland's going to make me fucking mad cash. How did they get on board with that?
From my research, they fell for the marketing of America first. Border wall. Let's either curtail or end immigration. Let's take America back to what it was. Now, for the alt-right, that is American traditional values, is white American Christian
Protestant
conservative
Western traditional values. Look, this is an amazing marketing effort by the alt-right, quote unquote. Now, when I say alt-right, I'm talking about Richard Spencer's alt-right. I'm not talking about the other subcultures or sub-philosophies of
fringe elements
or the sub-philosophies of the alt-right. I'm talking about Richard Spencer because he is the one that moved his base down into Washington. He was the one that got all the shit for going, you know, hail our people, hail Trump, at that stupid conference they had after the election. He's the one. He's great marketer. Do we get this? Everything is about marketing. He knows what he's doing. He is setting up a political think tank. People in this country are pissed. They are pissed. They are tired of their country being, quote unquote, overrun by immigrants and globalists. So, of course, they're attaching themselves to this movement. And what did this movement dredge up? Yes, Antifa says this. I'm with them. There is a real neo-Nazi sentiment that has been dredged up in this country. Why? The internet has made it accessible.
And not only have they latched on to the alt-right, but I think they've become, I don't know if it's numbers or if they're just the vocal element, and some of that's the internet, you know, you can have some 14-year-old kid in his parents' basement and he can spew the loudest and type in all caps.
You mean that fat, overweight kid with purple hair?
He doesn't have purple hair because he shaved his head because he's a skinhead.
Or he's a Twitter social justice warrior bot, too.
Or that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it works both sides, Chad.
It does. It does. But they've become such a vocal element that I think the alt-right has willingly or unwillingly picked up some of those views.
Like trolling? Stuff like that?
No, like the neo-Nazi views. You know, the a little too much emphasis on the white part and, you know, a little too much emphasis on the Protestantism.
Let's talk about this. And, like Chad and I and Angel have talked in private. I've been out of this whole political scene for a very long time. I grew up very political. I always followed the politics all through middle school, high school. And then in college, after 9/11, I really started to question the world. I think a lot of people did. So I'm catching up with these movements, these political movements that have been going on. So I've only delved into the alt-right because I wanted to figure out what the hell the alt-right was. What is alt-right? Is that the alt-right has a philosophy, for better or for worse, and that philosophy is identitarianism. And identitarianism has been around for a long time. Came from a French philosophy. I forget what it's called off the top of my head. This philosophy values Western civilization. That Western civilization is the foundation of this planet's philosophy and culture. In everything we deem important, it is concerned with traditional values. So confront this with what we see in this country with globalism, Obama's and the DNC's progressive, quote-unquote, platform. This shit is gonna give.
And this is where I disagree with them and challenge them. They're intellectually lazy. You know, they latch on to concepts like Western philosophy, but they don't have enough appreciation for history to understand where that comes from. Where does it come from? Greece. Who influenced the Greeks? The Persians, the Indians, the Egyptians, the Africans?
Chad, that doesn't meld with their white is right.
I agree completely, and that's what I'm saying. It's lazy, and they quote these half-truths, and then they dress it up in this pseudo-intellectual language, and, you know, then they throw in their, oh, and the fucking libtards don't know shit! And they're so naive, and I know you think I'm naive.
You are.
I am. But they don't take the next step.
Chad wants the best for humanity.
He really does. He's really looking out for everyone. He really is.
He really is.
I'm looking out for Angel and good. Jake good and Chad.
Well, stop! I'll do it on my own.
Okay.
I don't need anybody to look out for me. I look out for myself.
But they're not. They're looking out for themselves too. And I want to go back to that. You know, we talked about fear as the motivation here. You know, they act like it's this big identity, and then they throw in this Darwinist competition. You know, and there is that white superiority element that they talk about. Mm-hmm. But they don't want to compete. They don't want to be challenged by people who are different. They want to kick them out and ostracize them and hinder that and make it, you know, they want to be the big fish in a small pond. So when they talk about competition and Darwinism, it's bullshit and it's fake and it's a lie.
So let's go back again. You're going into different subcultures and of the alt-right. And
see, that one, I think, pervades all of them.
Yeah, in a way it does. So, I mean, if we go with Richard Spencer's alt-right, he is advocating an ethno-state. And as before we were recording this, we went back to World War I, Paris Treaty, correct?
I believe it was the Paris Treaty.
The Paris Treaty that said maybe we need to break up Europe and basically create an ethno-state. But we don't want the Asians because...
No, the Asians.
They're Asian.
They're Asian.
And we look down upon them. And if we need to, we'll get rid of that entire race. I mean, this was...
And their whole premise was they were about racial inclusion. They wanted to be included in all this. And they were like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. They wanted to be part of it. Like Angel said, all those white guys sitting at the big round table said, no, we don't want anything to do with it.
We don't want anything
to do with it. So this whole idea that this ethno-state is like some new idea or philosophy has always existed. And here's the thing. Richard Spencer's alt-right, he has said this before in interviews that I've read in YouTube videos. He goes, look, I'm a race realist. I understand that humans are tribal. They value their own cultures. And in a world that is becoming more globalized, where the borders are getting eradicated and cultures seem to be infiltrated and destroyed, people are going to more than ever try to find truth and try to find safety, and that will be in their own cultures. He's saying, if need be, we need to go to an ethno-state. So the whites over here, blacks over here, Latinos over here, and Hispanics over here. Why? Because that probably works best for civilization as a whole. Now, thing is, do you believe that? And like I've said, do I think that works anymore? No, I don't think that's realistic. How many interracial couples have you seen over the years? Since you were a kid. People don't care.
How many businesses or workplaces have people from more than one ethnicity? Find me one that's, you know, ethnically homogenous. I mean, around here, Mennonite businesses, maybe.
You won't have that type of homogeny.
No.
Unless you're in a closed society. So that's why Spencer's idea of an ethnostate is naive.
Intellectually lazy.
It doesn't work. And the problem with that is, how are you going to institute this in this world? Is he going to do it slowly and incrementally, politically? The only way I could see that is if you go pure anarchist. The government, central government, is dissolved straight down. People have to fend for themselves. Communities come together and do it themselves. Mm-hmm. And then what will happen? You will become like Chinatown in a big city.
They splinter off and become their own ecosystem.
Yeah. And they will contribute. And if you have to do trade with the blacks over here or the Latinos over here, mm-hmm. you will.
You will.
Because it's beneficial to yep. you economically and for survival.
Exactly.
That's where it goes back to your whole thing with Darwinism. So they kind of know that humans have to survive. Can you do that? Is it?
It's not realistic.
It's theoretical. It's just theoretical. Yeah. It's another philosophy.
Like my socialism.
But, like socialism, it is an ideology. So it's looking for people to brainwash and program through what? Command and control.
And can I just go back? We talked about the Paris Treaty in Japan. Japan didn't take that well.
Of course they didn't.
No.
They took that poorly.
We also shafted them, you know, in the treaties, and we said you can only have, what, 3 tons of battleship to every 5 of ours and England's. And then, you know, there was that whole Pearl Harbor thing, and let's say 6 or 8 torpedoes take a different course and take down our carriers. And that whole,
yeah, but
whole
I read
shebang has a different outcome.
The whole thing with the carriers was they knew the Japanese were going to do something, which is why they sent the carriers out for training exercises the day before.
Oh, no.
No,
Angels
they didn't know.
Did I read that?
No, it was luck. It was also...
I don't think it was pure
piss
luck.
Piss-poor planning no? on the Japanese part, because what did they use to make those strikes?
No, I'm going to go with Angel. There was rumblings and intel that the Japanese were looking
to do something. They knew the Japanese were going to do something, okay? And it was... I thought it was based on...
No, they
natural resources like oil was being cut off from the Japanese.
No, they caught word earlier somebody had made an intercept, but by the time it got to Washington and got back, they were already getting reports like, yeah, the Arizona flipped upside down, it's underwater, and, you know, we're fucked.
I don't know. I kind of believe that, you know what, it's like we know the Japanese are going to do something, and in case some shit goes down, these are our most important
ships. But we didn't know carriers
so
were
you guys
useful.
Are going to go out.
Angel, you are talking about what is called a false flag.
I'm just saying. I kind of have sort of a belief in that. That, you know, I think we kind of knew that it was going to happen. It's like, you know, we saw the precursors. We could see the writing on the walls. It's like, you know what? These fuckers are going to do something. I mean, you can't tell me they didn't know the carriers were going to be important. They built a fucking ship that could transport not only people, but equipment that you can get. You know, you could take your planes and fly them 50, 100, 200 miles away, whatever.
If we knew they were valuable, though, we would have limited those in the treaty. But we didn't, because we thought, oh, battleships, that's it. And that, what did the Japanese go after? They didn't go after our carriers because they didn't think they were valuable, even while they were using them to go after our battleships.
I don't think there were any carriers at Pearl Harbor. They were all battleships and...
Because they were out, which was luck and happenstance, and then we were forced into using them in under-supported carrier groups.
I don't find...
You know where, Angel, there is a real, quote-unquote, conspiracy theory.
Oh, I...
That
yeah.
said that Pearl Harbor was allowed to happen. They used it as a false flag opportunity so they could strike.
The outcome of that war was also not the certainty that we see now. No. I mean, that's where I struggle with that, like, letting them come in and... I don't think we were that into gambling back then, and I think letting Pearl Harbor go would have been such a gamble. I mean, for a while, we were losing.
Really? Let's think about it. let's think about this. Always on this planet, they will sacrifice people for profit.
Exactly.
And war.
Which is... But that wasn't just sacrificing people as a token jet. I mean, they took a chance.
I don't think they felt they were going to lose the war. I think they were just like, you know what?
It gives us an opportunity.
It gives us an opportunity to get back in, to build up our economy through war. Like, we will be able to get everybody behind.
But we're looking back knowing we won that war. Guadalcanal goes the other way. We don't get to Japan. Full stop. Like, if we lose that, we do not... It's another 20 years before we can build up the ships to get within striking distance of Japan. What happens in 20 years? If they're running amok in Asia, you know, the Pacific, and then they're like, well, we're over here, and since there's no Pacific Navy...
Think about it. All wars are bankers' wars.
They are, but that's... Oof. I mean, the Arizona was, like, borderline irreplaceable.
But it was replaced, Chad.
No, it was substituted.
When you are a government, you can spend whatever money you want.
Yeah, because remember, after that whole thing, it was just like, the budget is unlimited. Build them all. Build every plane. Build every bomb. Build every boat. We are going to fucking do everything we can.
That's what I mean. A battleship, the dollars aren't the issue. It's the time. Like, you don't just churn, you know, 100 of those off in Detroit. I mean, that's a major undertaking.
I get that, but what did we have to look for? So it was just like, okay, here we go. Let's do it. We got a common enemy now. Let's get over there. Forget about your troubles. We need to fight the Japanese. We got to fight the Japanese. And this Hitler guy? We better get over there.
That was his own fault.
We better start building tanks. We better start doing our shit.
That's the other part that gets me. We didn't declare war on him until after he declared on us.
Well, just because we know every company in America is profiting.
Yeah.
IBM, Kodak,
yeah. I mean, Hugo Boss.
Well, that was German, but over here in this
Volkswagen company,
it's just profit. No one cares about people dying.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. We didn't have to go to war with Japan to make money.
I find it very believable. I really do. What did we have to lose? Except for a couple boats and some men that we can easily replace.
And that's where I don't buy it, because they weren't easily replaced.
Well, that's because...
I mean, they sunk our battleships.
You sunk my battleship?
You know?
Battleship. Okay, they sunk our battleships, okay.
But that was the pinnacle of naval power at the time. Naval warfare was predicated on the battleship.
Okay, maybe they felt... Okay, maybe naval war was predicated on the battleship, and maybe they knew, okay, you know what? This is the newer, advanced technology. We have a ship that can literally go from point A to point B and doesn't have to be anywhere near its target and can launch 200 fucking planes and bomb the fuck out of somebody and come right back and nobody gets touched.
But that's where we learned that because we had to, and we made that a tool, and that's where the philosophy shifted, because we didn't have the battleships because the Japanese sank them.
Okay.
Like, we made do, and it really was making do for a while, and then we went...
So the Japanese figured it out before us, because they basically used carriers.
They used it as an ambush, like a targeted strike, but they weren't predicting it as a...
And you don't think there was any intelligence that were like, the Japanese have these boats where they can fucking take planes and basically blow the shit out of us right now.
Well, we had those same boats.
If they're going to do that, if we think the Japanese are going to show up with these fucking boats and just start sending planes over and blowing us up, you don't think we have the same technology? We should protect that. Because in case they do come over and do this shit to us, which we kind of have a feeling they're going to do, maybe we should send all those ships out there just in case these fuckers come over to do something.
Where do we send them?
They just went out. They sent them out to do training exercises or whatever. They sent them miles and miles away where they weren't going to get touched.
But wouldn't we send the battleships out too?
Well, maybe you're trying to bait them in. I mean, you don't want the Japanese to show up at Pearl Harbor. Well, there's nothing for us to bomb.
I would. I mean, that's what we did at Midway. We baited them out. They launched all these planes, and then we're like, we're not
dramatic,
there.
How dramatic would it be if the Japanese bomb Pearl Harbor? It's like, the Japanese bomb Pearl Harbor, and that's it. Whereas, like, the USS Arizona, the flagship, mothership, battleship of all battleship was sunk. Rise to arms. Sign up. Uncle Sam needs you. Now, propaganda. Is that not enticing propaganda to get people to be like, we need to go to war because the government says we need to go kill our common man because they have attacked us, our values, our... And it's like 18-year-olds are signing up to go to war to go die so that these corporations who are making the bombs and making the planes and fucking rebuilding the battleships and making the American fleet and the American economy's coming back, making it strong again.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I think as a symbol, it's just as effective, some kind of loss. You don't need a big Titanic. Look at the Spanish-American War. We didn't have to lose a fleet. It was one ship. That's what it took.
I still think it was an opportunity for the men behind the scenes to say, look, here's the thing. If we're going to make a sacrifice, this is a sacrifice we're going to make. But we're going to win out in the end because we can sway everybody in this country to do what we need them to do. Go fight. Go fight the enemy.
It's like Angel said in the one podcast, the bombing of Tokyo. I actually looked that up on Wikipedia after you talked about it because I didn't know that much about that. And I was like, Jesus Christ. They really
did. They completely obliterated Tokyo.
They bombed rubble.
Yes. They literally... There is military footage from 1944 or 45. They're bombing rocks, Chad. Oh, I mean, it's just like, guess what? I mean, it's not like we didn't go back and say, okay, you got your piece of the pie. Now we're really going to fuck you. Yeah, okay. Maybe they went in there and they fucked us up big time. But we knew we were going to come back stronger than ever. We're going to fuck you so hard.
See, that's where I question it. Wasn't a sure thing. Like, we know that now. And
I'm not saying that they're saying it was a sure thing. I'm saying that there were precursors and there were things that they saw that, you know what? It's an eventuality, basically. This is going to happen.
Yeah, I would agree with that. This is an eventuality. Yeah. We knew they were going to come for us eventually. We knew
some shit was going to go down. With the whole Paris Treaty, they're like, okay, the Japanese are fucking pissed. You can't tell me that they sat around. When the Japanese walked out on that first meeting, the post-World War I meetings of the Paris Conference, and said, you know what, fuck you guys. You don't think they sat around and said, all right, you know, we really pissed those Japanese off. We need to keep an eye on those fuckers. I guarantee they knew what the fuck
I'm not disagreeing
happen.
With that. I just don't think they knew December 8th, you know, oh, here come 250 planes with
maybe
torpedoes.
They were supremely surprised by that. I truly believe that they were surprised by what happened, but I think they also knew, okay, if we're going to protect something, this is what we're going to protect. And firmly believe that there was more intelligence than we thought. They want to talk about, oh my God, it was such a surprise attack. Oh my God, we didn't see this coming. I find that to be total bullshit. I really do. I really, really do. Knowing the United States government and the way it is now, I don't see it that much different back then. Maybe they know. Maybe they didn't know and have the amount of intelligence that they do today, obviously. Technology and everything has taken it way beyond what it is.
Communication speeds.
But they had the ability to know. I mean, come on. Countries have been spying each other forever.
No, I'll completely agree. We knew something was coming, but I don't think we knew what was going to happen
magnitude,
when.
Yeah, the magnitude and to the degree the Japanese were willing to take it. Yeah. I completely get that.
And the fact that they like launched that second wave and really fucked us.
I completely understand all of that. And that's probably why we did what we did to Tokyo once we had the ability and the resources and the manpower to completely annihilate.
Yeah, you strafed our hospitals after you sank our ships.
Exactly.
Fuck you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, we already blew that building up? Guess what? We're going to blow it up again.
Oh, is that an ambulance? We got this motherfucker.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's one guy trying to save somebody's life. Boom! I think when you look at that, when I look at that footage, that is a total like, yeah, guess what? You mess with the big dog. You got to us. You got to the big dog.
You kicked us in the balls.
But here's the thing. The wrath of God is coming down upon you, whether you want to believe it or not.
I finally got into over the last month or so, I got into Oliver Stone's documentary of the secret history of the U.S. And that's one of the first episodes where they're talking about World War II and how gleefully it seemed that Truman was like, yeah, drop that ship.
Yeah.
Drop it. And that he was just like, are you guys done building that? Are you done? Yeah. Are you guys done? Are you done building that yet? Come on. Let's get this shit going.
I mean,
like, when it came to him to drop it, he was like, oh, yeah. They have interviews with him sitting there gleefully smiling like, I had no problems.
You guys know I'm a bleeding heart liberal. I agree with that decision because I saw the casualty projections. I mean, they're there. They're in the public domain now. If we invaded Japan, they were going to bleed us white.
That is Truman's justification. Yeah. But he says it with such a smile.
He does. The generals weren't smiling, though. Like, they were looking like we were going to send 10 divisions on that beach and one battalion's going to make it up. Did you ever read the conspiracies that we had the atomic bomb to drop on Germany for 3 years and we didn't because they're white?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if we're going to test it on somebody, why don't we test it on them?
It's like Angel said, and we talked about this before. What was the Paris Treaty? Ethnocentric.
Yep.
Yeah, let's get rid of you guys.
Exactly. I mean, if they're just going back to what they originally wanted to do years ago. They wanted to eliminate the Japanese.
I mean, we say that. We firebombed Dresden. That was pretty fucking horrific.
That time, look, at that time in history, you dropped one atomic bomb and you completely annihilated Hiroshima. Wouldn't you think that's enough for them to be like, holy fuck.
Well, they didn't surrender. I mean, we waited a couple of days before we hit them with
a couple of days.
One.
But at that time, you're just like, God, that was so destructive. Like, you would be like, okay, we have the capability to do this again.
Allegedly, we were out and we're really lucky they surrendered because it was going to be another 18 months before we had another one.
I think there was actual military intel or a type of philosophy that said that the Jap won't give up. They will keep fighting until.
Oh yeah, their mentality was that these guys will die fighting. Yeah. I mean the kamikaze pilots and all that was.
That was why the projections for the invasion, because they said, you know, this isn't just going to be soldiers like we're running into on this island where they ferried these guys in. I mean, this is going to be the homeland and mom and the kids
that could
and
also
the daughters.
That could also be the element of surprise from the Pearl Harbor thing because. I mean, that's what they were doing. They were bombing, but they were also sending fucking planes to be like, you're going to crash into that fucking boat, and you're taking it down.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? If you miss with your two torpedoes, guess what? You're the torpedo.
And did you ever read about the guys volunteering for that?
Yeah.
It wasn't like the scum of the earth. I mean, they had fighter aces who were, like, signing up, and they were cutting their wrists so they could sign in blood so that the CO knew they were fucking serious.
Like that old school, like, fucking samurai bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I am going to die fighting as a warrior, or if you lost, you would stab yourself in the gut and kill yourself kind of thing. Like, that's some serious fucked up shit. You know,
well,
decorated soldiers who are like, I will die for my country, literally.
Yeah, we were charging bunkers, and they ran out of bullets in the machine gun. And then everybody strapped the bayonet on and ran out of the bunker. Like, that's why we didn't want to charge those beaches. Wasn't going to end well.
Yeah, I totally understand.
Yeah.
Like I said, it was part of the MLS. I was like, dude, we need to eradicate. And they were almost, it's almost like they were sitting around, you see, this is exactly why we wanted to eradicate them fucking a decade ago. Because they're fucking nuts. Is that the same thing we're doing with the Muslims?
No.
It's like, kind of like, these people are crazy. There's no way we're going to get through them.
I think it's the same type of propaganda.
Sort of the same. Yeah. Sort of the same. It's kind of like, there's no way we're going to get through them. They're crazy.
We dehumanize them.
And
we
I'm
make
not
them
saying
not
that.
People.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm not saying that. I'm not saying. I mean, I work with a bunch of people who are Muslim, and they're great people.
No, I know.
But
exactly
I'm just saying that's how they have turned and spin that around to mainstream society now. It's like, oh,
yeah, they're not just the guys who go to work with you and then go home to their family.
Yeah, they're crazy.
Yeah.
Like, they're always thinking about ways to just do crazy
they're
shit.
All terrorists.
Yeah.
There's no moderate guy. There's not the guy Angel works with.
Yeah.
No, he's plotting to bring down America.
Yeah, they're all plotting to bring down America.
Well, let's think about this. As we've been talking about, everything's incremental. This has been leading up since 9/11.
It's before that.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
Think about it, modern consciousness.
Yeah, that's the turning
point.
It's all leading up.
And maybe the whole Muslim thing now is kind of drunk going through, like, okay, we've already pushed the Muslim ISIS thing. Who's next? Russia.
Yeah.
Russia, you're next. Putin.
Oh, why next? Why can't we have two at once?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we have to have, I mean, that's
a backup enemy.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to have.
It's got
to
be somebody on the back burner.
There's another villain for the Power Rangers.
You have to have something up front, but when that gets a little weak, you got to bring the one from the back.
Oh, you
got to
spin it around.
Yeah,
you
got
to spin it around. Because people get tired of it. Because as human beings, you get so used to hearing something, sometimes you just become desensitized. So you're just like, okay, yeah, the Muslims, they're trying to kill me.
I know you don't like science fiction, and we talked about this. I read a book, and it was from the early 1990s. And, you know, they made these the people who were fighting the resistance against the big evil power, and they called them terrorists. And one of the novels, they're like 40 or 50 years into the storyline, and all of a sudden the big bad guys stop calling them terrorists because it just doesn't evoke anything anymore. It wore thin, so they started calling them wreckers.
Yeah, it's all Orwellian speak. Yeah. It's all, you know, these guys were warning us because in a way they knew about what was coming. Him and Huxley, all these guys.
Were we supposed to talk about the alt-right?
We did.
Oh.
We did, kind of.
No, I...
Okay, what have we learned?
The alt-right is evil. No, I don't think they're evil. I just think they're dumb.
Yeah.
I.
It's like any political philosophy.
Dumb or misguided?
Most of them are dumb. There are a few who are misguided.
I think they've tapped into something. They've tapped into a quote-unquote raw nerve of America, and they're going to market that and exploit it like anyone else would.
It's all for profit. Yeah. Everybody's got to make a living.